Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello and welcome to What a Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network, where we talk about everything Tottenham Hotspur and my good friend Jude Summerfield. It is a great day to talk about everything Tottenham Hotspur because we've just smashed up the Arsenal.
We have! Yay! Oh, you are as chipper as I've ever seen you, buddy. Oh, what a fantastic game, eh?
It was just so many perfect things to it. I think that's why. Like, it could have been just, you know, if we'd got through a nervy kind of 2-1, where it was okay, we've done our job, now it's just about kind of hoping things happen down the line. But it wasn't just that, it was a complete implosion by Arsenal, which is up there with the kind of salty whatever kind of that genre of Arsenal fan ever, like just perfect kind of everything. Everything was perfect.
Yeah. Love the result, but you know, all the little sides and crackling that come. Oh, wait a minute. All right. Where did we get to?
we'll start with the start of the night and just go from there.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Okay, I guess a good place to start would be the start of the night. I mean, it is not often that a game kind of dominates my feeling and my mood for more than a few hours at a time. But I woke up on Thursday morning, I was really, really kind of nervous. It really set in, wow, I could be about to go to a match where Arsenal secure top four on our patch, first time in front of full capacity. I was just like, I was just so kind of scared of that. And I was always kind of battling back with kind of logic, which was, I believe Tottenham are a better team than Arsenal. The table might not say it because there's always kind of variables, and especially the fact that Conte didn't come in until November. But it's just kind of, I was just wrestling with that. How did you feel in the lead up to it, Jude?
Yeah. Can I ask what time you got up on Thursday?
I got up around 8, and I wasn't scheduled to work in the morning. I feel like quite early for me. Like, yeah, on a day where I'm not required to do work straight away. Sure. I feel like that's quite early for me.
Yeah, I only ask because, yeah, I was up at 7 and was working that morning. I'd sort of been praying for a nice little, we have nice little 10 till 6 shifts, don't we? We're going to have a little lie-in and then the day usually goes relatively quickly. But no, I finish work at like 4:30. That day, and then it's like, look at the watch, still got another 3 hours to go, and the day's gone painfully slowly already, and there's all this anxiety and all this playing into your psyche. I had to go for a fucking walk like an hour before, just because like it was all getting too much.
It's because you know an hour before kickoff is team news, so you're like, okay, great, that's a milestone. Mm-hmm. But then you've got another hour after that to wait anyway.
Yeah, I made it like very tactical. So I was like, I'll get to the beach for like 6:45. And then when the news comes, And then even when I got home, there was still 20 minutes till kickoff, and it was like the longest 20 minutes of my life. Were you part of the crowd that walked down the high street?
No, I was not. I was aware. That was going to happen, so I got to pretty much as early as the media allowed in, because I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
And but even then, I thought, you know, it was a Thursday afternoon when I was getting there. It was really, really busy.
The pictures from it just looked incredible, didn't they? It was.
There's part of me that regrets not being able to go. Yeah, not being able to do that walk with all the fans and stuff. But, you know, everyone knew the importance of that. I think we generally do have showed up as fans for the big occasions at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I think the Ajax game, massive testament to that. And we'll come on to talking a little bit about that later. But as we were waiting anxiously for the match to begin, June, we were dealt some bit more bad news. Firstly, that Mikel Arteta and his weird attempt at mind games, saying that Saka might not be available, were, of course, lies. Saka started. But from steaming out of nowhere, there was someone who was in the north stand, the Paxton Lane end, and they were like getting pictures of all the players arriving. And he said Christian Romero was not the one of the players that had arrived for the team. Mm-hmm. And they kind of, these rumours started swirling. Oh, where's Romero? Is he going to be fit? Lo and behold, the team gets announced. There's no Romero. Davinson Sanchez comes in. And I was really kind of worried about that.
Mm. Our beautiful RG head case, yeah, wasn't fit for it. And he's been so good these last few weeks. Well, months, really. And you weigh up him and Davinson Sanchez. Like, before the game, I was convinced that would have quite a large effect on how they play, just because Romero is... I know we probably feed into his reputation as a cruncher, but he's so good with the ball at his feet as well, the way he charges forward and frees up space for other people. And Davinson's never really been about that, you know. he can struggle with his passing sometimes, and he's sort of a hero or a penalty merchant, isn't he, whenever he plays. So, that was some really dodgy team news that did, as you said, sort of came out of nowhere. And now he's not around for the rest of the season either, which is tough for these last two games. But we can come on to that.
And this isn't the last that we're going to talk about Davinson Sanchez either. We'll get to him as well. But so I went to set up in my seat about half hour before kickoff. I don't usually go out that early, but I wanted to kind of get a feel of the atmosphere, because it did feel like one of those games where you're going to be able to feel that everything that was in the stands, it was going to have a tangible impact on the game. And our good friend of this pod, Ben Haynes, a quick turnaround after he was in Arizona this week, pitch side with Oliver Skipp. And Oliver Skipp said that he was actually one of the people who was down the high road when all the kind of chaos was happening. So that was really nice to see. I love Ben, when he does the interviews pre-match and stuff. I've never seen the crowd react to him the way that they did last night, when he always says, get behind the team, the north stand, the east stand, the west stand, and the Park Lane south stand. Get behind the team, come on, you Spurs. And as he said that, for the first time I've ever seen, Ben probably might tell me otherwise that it's happened a few more times, there was a huge roar. There was a huge, huge roar. And this is still like 15, 20 minutes from kickoff. And I'm just like, whoa, okay, there's something special. You could see the cards TIFO, or whatever for the TIFO, they were laid out, so that was going to come. And then the whole 10 minutes before the kickoff, it was come on you Spurs, or when the Spurs go marching in, hello we are the Tottenham boys, all of that. And I tweeted about it last night, because this is a £1 billion stadium, we know it's an amazing stadium, we're biased, we will say it's the best stadium in the world, whatever. But one of the underrated things is how much kind of Levy pushed for the acoustics to be top notch, for everything that to be designed so that when the place is buzzing, it's really kind of buzzing. And I felt a little, not like dizzy, but kind of disoriented with how loud the noise was as the teams emerged, because it was like ringing in your ears. It felt properly like you're in a den, like there was just banging everywhere, everyone's shouting, screaming at the top of their lungs. And I think It's different to when I was at the Ajax game, which I think is the other game where the atmosphere has been on another level, but because I was in actually with the fans that day, so you kind of lose a bit of what's going on because you're contributing yourself. It's different when you're not, when you don't have the ability to do that. Did it sound as kind of loud and raucous on the TV? Oh, actually, I should ask, where did you watch it, actually?
Well, I watched it at home, and thankfully, none of my family are particularly big on football, so there was no ribbing, and I could just have my laptop on my knees and just watch it while they were watching, probably Selling Sunset or something like that. I'm not sure. but just at home, it sounded absolutely ridiculous, mate. I mean, from the games that I've covered of Spurs at that stadium, I haven't experienced a proper raucous pre-match build-up like the one that I saw. The few times that I've seen the stadium go into like properly ridiculous free-flowing chanting is when they've been like 4 or 5 nil up. So when they were chanting in that Everton game that you're just a shit Steven Gerrard to Frank Lampard, that was really clear. Because
when things are going in our favour, like just not from the off,
yeah,
kind of, I get what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's when it's been at its loudest. But it just looked special. I to be honest, seeing the amount of stuff that Tottenham's Twitter was putting out in the build-up to the game just made me like dread it more. But I think that that sense of like unity from the fans just sent me into a proper gammon phase of like, let's get into them, you know, come on you guys. we're gonna absolutely smash it. it just looked, I'm very jealous that you were there, but it just looked incredible, mate. Like, I just hope that that's the start of something pretty big for the stadium, because it must have been the first time it's properly felt like home, because it needed like a proper christening moment, didn't it? I don't think we really had that. We've had like good wins against decent teams there, but you know, when we beat Arsenal, there were no fans there obviously before. And like when we, I think the City one on the first day was quite good, but there was obviously a lot of noise from you know, other areas that were feeding into that as well. But yeah, hopefully that's, I mean, it's tough to make it a regular thing, isn't it? Because there's so much emotion and so many different storylines feeding into that game. It's quite rare. So, you know, it was just a massive, massive game. So the Spurs fans responded in kind, and they were brilliant all game. I'm sure being there in the press box, you would have experienced that. But yeah, they were amazing.
It was. If anything, it was a bit distracting. And I think the way that the game played out, I think if it was a tighter game, it might have been even more distracting. It might have been because I think I was talking to our good friend Dan Kilpatrick about it after the game. And he was just basically saying like it was just really a nice relief that the way that the match did go, it kind of died down at the end. It was a lot more calmer. We were able to just kind of bask in the glory of what was happening rather than worry a little bit. And for the kind of, you know, was there another decibel that could have been reached? I don't know. But it was a really memorable night. Before we start talking about the football,
might be a good idea, mate. It's a bloody football podcast, is it? Not a bloody fans podcast.
And the first thing I actually want to talk about is we'll go back to our boy Davinson Sanchez, because there was a point around the 5 minute mark where I think Arsenal kind of started a little bit on top, not like in terms of like they didn't make any chances or anything. Like it wasn't that. It was just the kind of, they had the ball in the better areas. They weren't actually doing anything with it. It's fine. We were kind of keeping them at arm's length. But there was a point where we were trying to build from the back, and Sanchez, he has a kind of few options. I think there were a couple of times where Bentancur was screaming to give it to him, or Højbjerg or Emerson, and Sanchez turns and passes back to Lloris. And this is 5 minutes in. And because everyone is so charged up, because everyone's still in that kind of mindset that this is do or die, there's a huge groan. And it's not like one of those kind of normal ones where a player passes it back. This is like it was the 89th minute and we needed a goal, and he's kicked it back from the halfway line back to the keeper. That's how loud the moan was. And I really thought that might have been a turning point for Sanchez and for Spurs, and that it might have made him a bit nervy. It might have put him off the game. But I actually thought, after the first kind of 5 or 10 minutes, I thought we really kind of kicked on from there. I was really impressed with just the way that we were progressing more than the way that Arsenal were progressing up the field, just in that opening, the opening chasm. And this is, we're not going to talk about this for long because there's not actually a lot happening at this point, but that was just my feeling of the opening bit.
Yeah. I'd say Sanchez had another little moment where he booted it into the crowd, which I was a little,
yeah.
I think that might have been after that back pass where I started thinking, okay, Sanchez and Emerson on the right against Martinelli. Because, like, as you say, like, Arsenal didn't create clear-cut opportunities in that opening 20 minutes. They got the ball into decent areas. But a lot of the times they did that, it was Martinelli who was sort of driving at Emerson and sort of looked like he got clear at some point and couldn't find the cutback or whatever. That was quite like a challenging opening 20 minutes for Sanchez in particular. But I think he handled it pretty well. And like, they didn't create any clear-cut opportunities going down that side. He won most of his duels. Like, Martinelli eventually sort of got, he just tucking himself out basically, didn't he? He got a bit tired and had to come off. which is, it must be a bit weird being in Davinson Sanchez and Emerson Royal pocket. It must be a weird place to find yourself, like, claw your way out of.
Yeah. I was saying in our Slack chat to the other person that was on shift with us, Tom, and I just said, like, he was covering another game. I just said to him, Martinelli's come off. He's locked in Emerson jail. That's a really weird sentence to type out for me, really.
So strange. Emerson's been so good these last things. He's picked a great time to actually do the performances because
he's putting the comp makers to work now, you know. They've got too much to handle.
but
after that opening tense 20 minutes or so, first big incident of the night, we get a penalty. Kulusevski with a really, really kind of teasing cross. And I couldn't actually see what happened first time from my seat. I thought that the claims were, I saw kind of Son going in for it, but my focus was on Sessegnon behind. And I thought the claim for the pen was that Sessegnon had headed it back and they'd come off Cedric or Gabriel's hand or something.
Yeah,
I didn't actually realize to watch the replay what it was. And I couldn't actually see that many protests from where I was. But then I watched the replay on the screen. I am thinking it's a foul. I am simultaneously thinking it's not, you don't always see them given, but I'm also thinking it's a foul. But I knew instantly Arsenal fans are going to find a way to to bring this up, to kind of twist it against them, that there's, the referees hate them, that the PGMOL like are purposely out to get them, that Mike Riley has it in for them and all this kind of other nonsense. But did you think it was a pen?
I just really hope the authorities take a look at those complaints and take it really seriously, because this seems to happen season upon season.
I can't believe it.
Only to Arsenal, you know, the rest of us sort of go, you win some, you lose some, and then they're just wrong every season.
Well, I think someone said there was a graphic on Sky, what was the amount of red cards since Arteta's taken over, and I think Arsenal are way out in front.
Well, we've written an article about that, mate. We need to update that. We actually need to update that today. That's totally slipped my mind. The actual penalty, you know what? If the ball had been like 10, like 5 or 10 foot higher, I think, like you could.
If someone's not actually involved trying to get the ball.
Yeah, this is the problem I found, because like if you're going to nudge someone, you have to get the timing right as well, because otherwise, you know, if somebody's leaping, you get a nudge in the back, you're getting propelled forward, aren't you? And in my mind, I thought, you know, when it was live, I was like, get your head on that side. You like it's missed like two defenders in the middle, and I'm thinking,
it actually harmed the chance of us scoring a goal. That's really what happened. That's why the penalty was awarded.
Yeah, I thought he's the favorite to get that ball, which is why on the replay, you look at it and you think, well, he's about to nod it in and he's got a nudge from the back. Like, I don't see what the complaint can be, you know? You have to take emotion.
You mean the full-length replay?
Yeah.
The full-length replay and not the 0.5-second clip that Arsenal fans are using where Son is literally just falling to prove that it wasn't a foul. It's just like, you've clipped out the foul, you idiot. But whatever. No, Harry Kane steps up.
Yeah. Proper field day.
Harry Kane steps
up,
scores the pen. Yeah, he scores the pen. That's, Harry Kane scores pens. That's what he does. Like, don't need to really kind of look too much into it. Apart from maybe Antonio Conte's muted celebration, which I thought was really cool. Just kind of like, you know, this guy goes crazy about every single goal. We could be like 5-1 down and he'll start running over to his coaches. Yeah. And he just kind of didn't do that. Just kind of arms folded, little fist pump, back to work, you know, kind of different for him. But just this is really kind of began Arsenal's cycle of implosion, because Cedric definitely thought that he was doing a smart thing by knocking Son out of his stride, fouling him. But because he's going for the ball, it's not smart. It's dumb. It's really, really dumb. And then soon after, Son just is the protagonist again. He at this point, with a couple of scraps with Rob Holding, you know, there was one at the start. This is the thing that Arsenal fans leave out. They focus on the scrap where Son's kind of barging his way out, like his elbows are not massively swinging, but he's just kind of like trying to get out of his grasp. But they do neglect to mention that there is also one where Holding is like properly kind of kneed him, and has a ball boy style in the back, and Son had to kind of get treatment for that as well. But then it could have gone either way with one of those getting sent off. I think after that incident, Son tried to go after Holding, and I think someone had to put Holding back, and I think that kind of helped him from getting sent off. But one of them was going to go. Holding, already at this point in the booking, Son's running in behind with a great ball over the top from Dier. Elbow to the face. I could see it point blank from where I was. And when the ref blew his whistle, I was like, I literally said out loud to myself, oh my God, he's going to walk. And I was just thinking, oh my God, they're going to be 1-0 down and they're going to have 10 men.
We've sort of been in this position as well. So, and it didn't end well from what I remember.
Yes, I did. So, that's one of my tweets buried beneath all the kind of fun stuff last night. I was worried about a 15-16 kind of collapse, but
yeah. It was obviously a bit of a game plan for Rob Holding to try and go in tight on Son. And I think they had, in that 20 minutes, they had El Nene sort of around Kane, and he was sort of doing a good job at intercepting passes and that. But so those were the two sort of like central battles that were going on. But Holding, like, it's I just find it bizarre. I find it a bizarre approach to defending, to be honest. He's rattled Son quite early on, and Son's a dark arts guy as well. Like, let's not get it twisted. Like, he's had red cards. Low-key
underrated.
He's learned from our boy Eric Lamella, hasn't he? So many years together, they've been swapping tricks of the trade. So they're both getting aggro with each other, and I think, you know, fair play. There's been a little bit of argy bargy, but nothing that until Holding got booked for like repeat offending. Untoward. But I think by the time Holding had been sent off, he had committed 4 fouls in 36 minutes. And I think, I can't remember.
All of them probably worthy of booking, right?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I was thinking just because it was early, like referees just tend to give a bit more leeway, don't they, before they say.
So
I think one of them must have been for totting up. Which, you know, you commit 3 fouls, you're gonna get booked, and then it's just so brainless that the forearm to the face. I'm genuinely trying to wrap my head around it. I do think Son is looking for a reasonable amount of contact from Holding, because he's got him targeted, he's got Holding on a yellow card.
So he's rolling him every time that he's this yellow. Like, Holding gets touched tight, and Son's like, cool, I'm going to beat you every time, no matter what the outcome is. I'm winning this duel. Yeah,
sure. So there's been shirt tugging and all that. And then, but I don't know if he's just going for, if he initially goes for a shoulder, and maybe his aggro's got the better of him and he's just extended his arm into, it's so strange. I just don't understand what was going through his head at that point, because the game isn't gone. You know, Arsenal are a decent team. They've had decent little moments in that opening 20. And he just sticks a forearm in, like, the biggest game of the season into Son's face and gets himself sent off. Like, they can't appeal that, can they? Because it's two bookings. No,
it was second yellow, yeah.
Yeah, and like, I saw, like, articles saying, or Mikel Arteta saying they want to appeal it. But they can't do it. He's out.
I've got some news for you, buddy.
Yeah, it's unless he thought it was a straight red, and that's why he was upset.
it could have been a straight red. There's grounds where it could have been a straight red anyway.
Mm.
I'm biased because this went away, but I actually thought that I thought the ref made two good decisions, big ballsy decisions that he might not have given if like, it was like a cup final at Wembley or something. Like, you remember that Chelsea-Liverpool Carabao Cup game, sorry, at Wembley. Mm-hmm. There could have been a couple of red cards in that, and it felt like the ref didn't want to ruin an occasion. Mm-hmm. And the Arsenal camp was saying the ref did ruin the occasion here, but the ref was making the right calls. That was the important thing. His first job as a referee is to get the decisions right, and I thought he got them right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll agree with you, mate. Yeah. And nothing more to add.
And then the second goal. Actually, really well worked. It kind of has gone under the radar how well worked it was. Son's corner comes in. Bentancourt didn't know he had that leap in him. Just kind of, it's like a rugby line now. Like, he rises so high in the box. And then Kane onside stoops in, really kind of good, low, pure poacher's finish to prove that he's not just the kind of false nine or the paradox nine that Dan quoted as saying, but he is still a number nine at the same time.
Yeah. Perfect time to pick out a set piece like that as well. Obviously, holding's gone off. Arsenal didn't make a substitution to bring a central defender on in that time. I can't remember who slotted in. I think they went three at the back at one point.
Xhaka was filling in a little bit at times. Ben White was stripped and ready to go, and then they didn't bring him on. I don't know if they just felt
he'd done no training. I don't think he'd done any training.
So he looked ready, and then Arteta was just like, "No, fuck it, sit down. Yeah. It's not worth it. Not worth it, mate."
Yeah. The ball in was perfect. Great little flick from Bentancur, and I thought the finish was quite hilarious, to be honest. The way he sort of like collapses like his body and just falls and heads it in.
It's like he's doing everything he can in order to get the best contact on it.
Yeah, and avoid clattering into the post as well.
Yeah.
That would have taken the shine off. Yeah. That was a really nice goal. And I'll be honest, I texted my mate before the game saying, like, I think Son will be the guy here. And it was actually like, it was really lovely and refreshing that Kane was like the guy in the. I know he's been the guy in the North London Derby so much, but just in a game of this magnitude, that he was the man who got us that cushion, that 2-0.
Yes, yeah.
That just set us up in the game, and from then on, it was like, surely there's no way this goes wrong. And then he just generally started getting into the game more and started like striking the stuff.
Yes, that was it. Like, I think when he scored the pen, that was like the kind of catalyst. Like, okay, I'm here. I've settled in, because he was quite quiet in the opening exchanges, but then once he's got the pen, he's got the goal. He's like really kind of can smell blood, and that's kind of it's been more about Kane like the last couple of months. Really, like he's not playing full throttle all the time. He's picking and choosing his moments. He's more kind of considered about, okay, when am I going to drop? When am I going to run behind? When am I going to bring Son and Kulusevski into play instead? So I think he kind of recognised that he's not like the same Kane who could beat at least a few people with a yard of pace a few years ago. Yeah. He's different. He's a different player now.
He's got the nutmeg at least. He wheels that out every now again. So it can be a player there. But yeah, not the wheels anymore, I don't think. So from that sort of point, I mean, how did it go? That was about 37 minutes, wasn't it? And it was just relatively cruise until half time, right?
Yeah, we had Emerson probably could have added a third with Cesson John's good cross. Emerson just fluffed it. I think this is actually a good time to talk about the wing backs, actually, because I think both were superb. I think Cesson John in particular was incredible in the way that he's locked down Saka and Salah. In the last week, I think those two are going to win the PFA Awards this year. I think Sal will win Player of the Year, and I think Saka will win Young Player of the Year. For Cessny, on a guy who so often I know that I have criticised him a lot for saying he's just too timid. He doesn't have that kind of aggression that we need in a Conte team. But you actually now look at kind of some of his body of work now that he's had a run of games, starting with really that kind of City game at the Etihad where he's really impressive. Now he's had back to back kind of 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 performances against Liverpool and Arsenal. He's finally becoming the player that we hoped he would be.
Yeah, he's good and authoritative in defence now. He has been in the last two games. And I feel like he's getting more attacking opportunities as well. He's getting into the right positions more often than not.
He's working with Son a lot more.
Like, yeah, I think
they have a nice little I'll go on the overlap, you go the underlap kind of relationship. Yeah.
Which is good because, I mean, Sessegnon's got a naturally attacking mind anyway. So you'd hope that he can sort of get himself into shooting positions even a little more. But yeah, to lock down Saka, even if he wasn't like, I'm sure he was fit. He was obviously fit enough to play, but maybe not at like the peak of his powers, I suppose. But it was a great effort. And yeah, and Emerson on the other side as well. Can't wait to see. Has his compilation dropped yet or... I'm sure it will by the time.
I know, it's sure going it to get so many retweets.
I think that might go viral.
Like, this is the thing. I think some people work have been asking about it, but Emerson's like, why? What's this about his comps? Are they like a thing? It's like, yeah. Amazing. That's the thing about it. And obviously, Emerson was the guy who held up the white smoke flare thing for the iconic picture.
He
was
scared, isn't it?
You know, if the season ends well, then that should be the kind of defining picture of the season for me.
Yeah, he was he made like a load of tackles yesterday, Emerson. Like we said earlier, Martinelli had a few little opportunities to go at him, but a lot of the time he shut him down. You mentioned there about the chances that I think he had a couple of chances, like one where he just lashed a bit wildly into the crowd, and then another. Yeah, which was sort of he was arriving and didn't get the right contact at the back stick, which was a bit frustrating. But yeah, defensively, he was really, really good. And he's getting a bit better in possession as well, I think. Like, I'd like Sessegnon and
Sommer on the side. He's getting there,
yeah. Yeah, and I think there's more of an understanding with Kulusevski as well, now that those two have played together quite a lot, which is, it's obviously not as productive, I suppose, as like, you know, Sonke or how we go down the other side, but it's good to see. Just thought he was really, really good. He deserves some praise because we've slagged him off this pod a long
time. What makes you think that, doesn't it? That, you know, Conte's come in. What was the thing that kind of was standing out to who the players are going to improve? You think the wing backs, that's the kind of key to it. Mm. And you'd probably say that three of the four have all massively improved. And the only one who hasn't was really regular on who I actually thought started really well and looked like someone who was going to be a key player under Conte, but he's kind of been in and out of the team with injuries and stuff. I still think there's maybe a player there. Maybe it might not be for us. Like, I think if we get a good bid, then maybe that's one you sell, you look to reinvest with a better player, and then you have Sessegnon competing with it. But we are really starting to see the fruits of a real Conte team. I think that's really obvious now. And you know, I know a lot of the stuff has been about kind of what we can do with this team, what about the rebuild and stuff. I'm trying to not get ahead of myself. The season isn't done yet. We're still in fifth. We have a great chance to get to fourth now. And, you know, I think I'd say it's about 50% odds of us getting fourth at this point, because it massively depends on Newcastle. But you can definitely see this is a Conte team now in terms of the structure, in terms of the energy, in terms of the quality, in terms of the way last night particularly, the way that everyone's united. Because I think the thing that stood out to me a couple months ago now, I think it was either before West Ham or Newcastle, I can't remember which one came first, where Ben was talking with someone pitch side. I think it was Paul Allen. And if it's not Paul Allen, I'm sorry, because I'm throwing him under a bus a bit here, where he kind of said, oh, you can really feel like Conte's building something here, like it's different, that the energy's different. And I was a bit like, it's a bit premature for that. Like, at this point, we're still kind of chasing. I know we're still chasing now, but we're chasing even more back then. But it was like, it's a bit premature. Like, I can see the team getting better, but I want to see more of it. I want to see the real kind of harmony across all levels. And I wasn't really seeing that at the time. Like, Conte was still kind of in and out on, like, his future, whatever. Now, I definitely kind of see something different. I see something here where if Conte is to stay and we were to get top four and we have Champions League football, we have the pull to bring in the targets that we really want to bring in, then this is really, really good. This is a really good time to be a Spurs fan.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are still those games that, I mean, Burnley on Sunday, for example, still gives me the jips, just because it's like...
That scares me so much.
Well, yeah, exactly, because it's like low block, Wout Weghorst up front, they're just going to sit in and look for a set piece or anything. Like, we haven't got Romero, so it's up to us to go and break them down. We can't just rely on moments of individual stupidity like we did yesterday to win us the game. We're going to have to be really, really creative. And we haven't always, you know, you look at the Spurs, Spurs-Brighton game, you look at the Brentford game as well. Like, those are two tricky games that they just couldn't create anything. And I don't think they had any shots on target in those games. So things, yeah, there's still like more work to do for sure. And they've got to be more creative in games against teams like Burnley. But yeah, in that Liverpool game, we saw players putting their body on the line, like Ben Davis. He had a great game again yesterday, but he was making blocks for days.
I thought so as well, ridiculous. Yeah. Another last-ditch block as well, similar to the Salah one.
And it was nice because it was like, obviously, you'd rather not concede chances like that, but it was like they were getting quite close to being able to just nick one back. And it was like
just edging second, forward a little bit.
And just at the last second, the door was being shut in their face, which is I found quite funny. to be honest, it was like, oh, like dangling carrot, you know? Nah, we are closed today, sir, unfortunately. but yeah, it's good times. I think there is a generally more positive vibe around the team now, just because it's obviously so much harder to get behind them if you have no clear idea what it is they're trying to achieve, which is what we had at the start of the season with Nuno, and we were like, I don't know how
we're just kind of treading water, weren't we?
Yeah, exactly. We don't know really how to score goals, and then when we're losing by three goals, so we're not defensively solid. Like, there seems to be no improvement from the hangover of Mourinho the previous season. But yeah, I mean, we're obviously going to be on a high after we do Arsenal 3-0. but it does feel a lot more positive now. And yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much I buy into this talk of momentum and all that. You know, I think the two teams left for fourth just have games to play, really. And if Arsenal nick a result in Newcastle, then, you know, it's still in their hands, unfortunately. But like, sort of almost regardless of, I know Champions League is very, very important, but if they finish fifth and miss out by a point or something, I know there will be questions over the hierarchy and, you know, manager and stuff like that, certain players. But the improvement has just been so massive over since that last game for Nuno, when they got done 3-0 by United.
Mm.
So it's just a much more harmonious environment, I'd say. And I think there is genuine belief that they can go on. And, you know, if they do get fourth, go on, get the right players who can help us challenge on both fronts, maybe have a little clear out of the guys who aren't going to be able to contribute going forward, and just build from there. Like, a few of our colleagues have said they want Arsenal to get fourth because they're less threatened by them if they get fourth to go on, as opposed to Spurs, who, you know, if they go and get like a killer wing back who like scores 6-7 a season, somebody with a little more creativity in midfield, then they could be a really, really dangerous team for anybody. So yeah, I think the future is looking much better than it was maybe post that first Burnley game. it seems like a lifetime ago now, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Sucked the life out of me, that one.
Good Lord. Anyway, let's wrap up with the match, the goals from the match. And I feel like I haven't actually looked back at it too many times. I didn't get a clean look at it the first time around, so you might have to help me out with this, Jude. So Sanchez plays a nice ball into the feet of Kane. Just like, this is about a minute after the second half kicked off.
Yeah.
Sanchez plays in Kane. Kane is like wrestling with Gabriel, trying to keep the ball, trying to get a sight of goal. I didn't really know that the way that the crowd reacted, like, it kind of went silent a bit, like they were just kind of waiting for something to happen, like they weren't sure what was going on. They both go down. I don't know if the crowd's kind of like waiting for like the ref to blow whistle for a pen or anything, and they're like just kind of silent. And then someone just kind of strolls in, hits it through all the body of players and into the top corner. It's like, oh, it's a goal. Like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Another one.
Yeah, it was quite odd. I think I remember there was sort of a brief appeal from the crowd for a penalty. It wasn't that loud though. It just looked like Kane was holding off Gabriel and then slightly lost his balance a little bit. And from there,
it was like ice hockey where the players just start firing. It's like, oh, just, yeah. Just let them go at it. Yeah, it's fine.
Just let them tire each other out. Yeah. So yeah, and then they both hit the deck, and then I thought either Gabriel or El Nene were like in position to clear the ball. So I was like, okay, all right, they'll get rid of that. We'll have to, you know, go again. And then it just like squirmed into quite an awkward little position for Son. And he doesn't like, he doesn't thwack it. I think he's almost a little bit wary of a big challenge coming in from either side. Like, and worried about his legs. But he doesn't like really rip his foot through the ball. He just sort of almost delicately just lifts it into the corner, which is, it was a really nice moment of just, you know, accuracy and precision. Because I think he knew, stick it in the corner, Ramsdale, there's so many bodies in there. If you can just find that little bit of space to put it in, there's no chance of saving it. He's so close in. And yeah, it was just, it was a really, really nice, it was a lovely ball from Davinson. It was nice that he was actually taking that chance to bring the ball forward and find passes into that. I'd be really concerned if I was like an Arsenal fan watching that. Just one pass, get the ball into the area. Kane's just holding off Gabriel. Yeah. You're like, there's got to be a little more to your core than that. You've got to work out your core, man, you know? So yeah, but it was a great ball in, and that was like a proper like hold-up play from Kane. I know that we don't see that too often from him, but like it really just put that Arsenal defence into...
He still didn't do it.
Yeah, just puts that Arsenal defence into a little bit of a disarray. And they just panic, and the ball eventually gets its way to Son, and he finishes with aplomb, I'd say. Awesome. 21 league goals now.
He's... 21 league goals. Mohamed Salah, what's your back?
Keep banging the drum.
I'm running out of articles, mate. I couldn't do one last night about him. The only way I was going to do a new Son piece last night was if he scored 5 goals and was crowned president of the United States at the same time or something. This is the standard now. I'm done. My campaigning's over. I don't need to campaign anymore. Everyone knows.
What if he does a Kane and scores 7 goals in the last 2 games and wins the Golden Boot with 28
goals? That would be delicious.
Yeah.
That would be, it can't be ruled out either. You know, you look at the last 2 teams are playing, especially that last one.
Yeah. I tell you what, there's no jeopardy over that Norwich game, is there? It's, I know, clip that up later, but seriously.
Yeah.
Like they are.
No, if we can't do Norwich, then we deserve to be relegated with them. Sorry. Yeah. Anyone that's kind of lost points in Norwich this season, they go with them. Take them.
Liquidized. Instant liquidation, yeah. Quite frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think just before we go to the post-match stuff and kind of what this all means, I think we need to go through everyone that we haven't talked about yet and give them a shout out, because I thought I gave the lowest rating I gave last night in my player ratings was a 6 to Hugo Lloris, who made some really good saves and commanded his box again really well, and is getting better at kicking.
Yeah, he made a few decent saves, didn't he? I think he got 4 or 5 or 10 in total. There was one little sort of cross to the back stick where he juggled it a little bit and managed to click into it eventually. But yeah, that was good. Whenever those little clip balls were coming in, he was being proactive and coming to claim the ball. Raced off his line once or twice as well. Dived at the feet of some attackers, I think, and nicked it off there. So yeah, I think going by our player ratings, a 6 is usually just like, you know, decent enough, not exceptional, didn't pull out anything amazing, which is probably about right. Like, kept his clean sheet, decent distribution, made the saves he would have been expected to make. So, yeah, decent for him, for sure. We should probably lay it on thick for Eric Dier as well, shouldn't we? Because he's been...
Eric Dier and Benji Davis.
Benji Davis, yeah.
Solid boys again.
2 solid boys. I'm getting very convinced by this Dier sort of quarterback role now. Like, I think he's grown. So he's a proper Conte defender now, which is like dreamy to see. He just gets on the ball so much. I think the balls he played over the top weren't as good as they have been maybe in the last few weeks, but one of them led to the red card, didn't it? For holding. And he seems to have eliminated those brain farts that he has in defence. So he just goes and knocks it out and is decent with the ball at his feet. So very encouraging that he's been excellent.
Ben Davis could have had. He looked like he could have started with a horrid night. You know, he got kind of barged by Saka. I didn't think that was a foul. I thought that was a clean shoulder to shoulder, and Davis just came off worse.
Yeah,
which funny enough led to Antonio Conte getting booked as well. but from now on in, it was just really kind of solid. Helped out like Sessegnon helps, like getting that kind of triangle of attacking left-sided players with Sessegnon and Son up the pitch. Which really kind of helps with the way that we kind of break down teams as well.
Yeah, I really liked, I don't know, I don't think I've seen it as much in other games, but how much Højbjerg was almost dropping into that left centre-back position.
Yeah.
And then Davis was getting up the pitch, which just, which is added. That must have been something they've been planning for this game because I haven't seen it before.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It just feels like there's new layers and improvements to this team all the time. Like, we feel like we are going somewhere. And you did mention Berg, I thought he was outstanding, just kind of sweeping up. I thought it felt like he was first at every loose. It felt like he was really, you needed kind of his style of player in a derby. You needed someone who's going to not shy away from like those kind of 50-50 duels, who's going to really kind of bring that kind of energy. And there's a lot of Højbjerg detractors who kind of say like, oh, like, it's just kind of not really there with him. But I thought this is the perfect game for him. I thought he actually complimented Benson Caldwell, who I think I saw it right, saying that he completed 100% of his dribbles last night, our boy Rodrigo.
Well, that was something he was definitely looking to do as well. He got on the half a little bit and managed to... I think there might have been a shot. I don't think he got a shot away at any point, but there was sort of a few opportunities where he might have taken one on from range and then shipped out wide. I think I'm back in the Højbjerg fan club now, to be honest, because he does have good games and bad games, and when he plays badly, I do think that the team suffers as well, just because it's such a pivotal part in the team. So if he's got an off day on passings, you know, that affects the whole team because they can't build properly. And you know, a lot of the play from Spurs is often side to side, isn't it? So he's naturally getting on the ball and is needed. But he was brilliant, made a load of tackles, recoveries. He seemed to just shut down a load of sort of half promising Arsenal attacks. Hopefully that steal just continues in these next few games because Spurs are going to need it. Definitely going to need it.
Yeah. And then the last starter, which we haven't really talked about, is Kulusevski, who... generally one of his quieter games, but he still got into the thick of things. Like, I think he really relished getting in those kind of byline battles with whoever it was, whether it was Xhaka or Tomiyasu or whatever. And also, like I mentioned earlier, provided the really, really good cross, which ultimately got us the pen. So,
yeah.
I think there's the thing like with some of these players now, even when they're not at the centre of attention, they're still doing good things. They're still having an impact on the game, a positive impact on the game.
Yeah. So he was quiet, but he wasn't anonymous, you know. He was still sticking his shoulder into... I think he had a tussle with Gabriel at one point very early on in the game.
Yeah.
It looked like he was also being to those Arsenal defenders like, you know, we're here for a fight. And he didn't have his most amazing game. He still, like, contributed well and he helped back in defence and all that. But it was just nice that there's still that aggression, like just all the way through the team, and he provided that. Decent enough.
Anything else you want to add on what happened on the pitch, or should we dive into the afters?
I tell you what, I had been hankering for like a good 5-0 at one point in that game.
I was as well. I was like, kill these guys now.
Yeah. Really rub their faces in. Let's break them now, you know.
Yeah.
And then see them go to Newcastle with their tails between their legs. But
yeah,
to be honest, like they just saw the game out really, really well. They didn't overextend themselves. Like obviously Son got brought off and he wasn't too happy about that. but he had imagine if he'd stayed on and got injured in like the 85th or something like that. So that's
that would look really bad. I think it was a good call from Conte.
I think it's the smart decision. So just the way they managed.
And even our boy Joe Rodon got run out.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah.
That was the most pointed around the 75th minute mark where one of Conte's coaches has got run down the byline and he's pointed to someone to come back. And Harry Winks, I think Winks had already gone down to get his shirt and stuff earlier in the game. He was like pointing to me. He was like, "Do you mean me?" And he was like, "No, no, you." And then Rhodes kind of looked. He's like, "Me?" he runs back down. He comes on. But I can't remember anything he actually did or anything. Didn't really matter. Not that it mattered anyway. But no. You know, this is a player that Conte has admitted in the past he probably should have played more. I don't think we're going to see a huge amount of him going forward, which is a shame because I think there is a player there. But I hope that wherever he goes, whether it's here or if it's elsewhere, that he does well because he's provided us with a lot of good content with Gareth Bale in the last year.
Yes, he has.
Largely last year, obviously, when Bale was here, but you know, you can't just buy good content like that, you know.
No, you have to have the right mix of Welsh international footballers. I suppose you can buy it then.
Get Bale on the blower.
Yeah. Be nice if like he could go to promoted Premier League. You know, team maybe like a Fulham or a Bournemouth and whoever wins the playoffs, just so he can. Because I think he never really had a proper run for Spurs at any point. Like he was always just plugging the gaps, really.
Yeah.
Or like,
I don't think he's any kind of like standout attributes. I know he's quite tall, but I don't think he's like a massive error threat. But he just kind of excels at a lot of things. Like he's not like a liability in terms of pace. He doesn't make stupid decisions. He's just good at what he does. He's just a really kind of calm sort of thing. With actually quite a lot of experience now. Like, I know he hasn't played a lot for us, but he still has. So the pressure of playing a big club, but played in some really, really big games with Wales. And I think that's a really important thing as well.
Yeah, just needs to go and play regularly, doesn't he? Like get a proper season, top flight. And then,
Okay, enough about Joe Roden. It's time for the afters, Jude.
The afters.
My favourite part of the evening. Oh, it's beautiful. So, Arteta goes on and speaks to Sky first and gets asked about the holding red card and the kind of referee performance in general. Pulls the kind of proper Jose Mourinho, I prefer not to speak kind of line, says, if I say what I think, I'll be suspended for 6 months and I would rather be on the touchline for Newcastle game, whatever. And, you know, I actually think that he's doing this as a bit because he's trying to defend his players because he wasn't actually complaining that much on the touchline when those decisions happened. And he's acting like lightning. We can laugh at him for doing this. But it was like, this was the big thing of his post-match interview. We came in to speak to the written media as well. It was the same thing. Got asked about it. He said, I'm not talking about it. Like, didn't want to get into it. Just refused to. Then Conte comes in. He gets told about Arteta's remarks. And he really goes off on one. He's digging him out. I'm gonna be a professional, Jude. I'm gonna pull up exactly what he said. I wanna make sure this is right. So give me a second. Okay. What Conte said was, I think that Mikel Arteta is a really good coach. He's doing a really good job. He has just started to do this job. I think that I listen to him complain a lot. I think that he has to be focused more to his team and not to complain. He has just started his work and I think that he has to be calm and try to continue to work because he's very good. But to listen to a coach complain a lot of the time is not good. But it's okay. The red card, the colour of the card to me in terms of holding was clear. Don't forget against Liverpool, I said nothing about what happened with Fabinho not getting sent off. If we were to complain, we have the possibility every game to say about the referee, the decisions about postponed games, alluding to the January thing, which we'll come into in a sec. I think this is advice. If you want to ask my advice, it's good advice, but I don't care. And then Conte wasn't then again, he was asked specifically about when you say about, if there's other complaints, do you mean like the fixture schedule or do you mean postponed game again, January? And Conte at this point is laughing. He's like genuinely laughing. And he adds, if you remember, he complained about the fixtures. No, at the time I said it's not good to complain because Arsenal were good to postpone a game in an incredible way for positive COVID tests and they only had one player with COVID. I didn't forget this. We have a lot of possibilities to complain. Today I could complain about why we play on Sunday at 12 o'clock and Arsenal play on Monday night. Then they have one more day rest and we play against Leicester, Liverpool and Arsenal. And now 2 days after, we have to play the first game at 12 o'clock. And everyone, I think there was a lot of written media. I think everyone's looking around at each other. I know Dan was looking at me a little bit, just kind of like, wow, that's a line. We have our line, boys.
Mate, all these top six managers, they're such prima donnas, it's ridiculous. Like, they take any
they've really started swinging in recent weeks.
They really have, yeah. And you've got Pep suddenly coming out of nowhere saying everyone supports Liverpool, and it's like, that's never how it's been in England, you know. You're not a Liverpool fan.
Liverpool fans will be the first to say, no, they hate us, actually.
Yeah, you had Klopp the other day being like, oh, I don't like how Spurs play. They're fifth, you know. Amazing. Rangnick's always slagging off his own players, saying we need 20 new ones in the summer. Tuchel was like, I don't know. He seems a little better than the most, but yeah. And then
Tuchel's got it together, and that's a guy who's been very explosive in the past of PSG. So that tells you the state of play at the moment.
Yeah, and then you've got Arteta, who I think sort of took it to another level last night with his sort of deflection. It was a very, very. But to be fair, I think the last thing Arsenal's squad would have needed is their manager with two games to go. A 1-point advantage with games, a tough looking game against Newcastle, and you know, Everton might still be fine staying in the Premier League. But the worst thing that Arteta could have done has been like, we were shit. Like, that would not have helped anyone. So I totally get why he's gone straight to like the Mourinho playbook and gone, oh, I can't talk about this, I'm upset. Because it just makes sense and it puts more pressure on him. And like you said, like now we're laughing at Arteta rather than the players. So,
but it's also giving validation to their fans to kind of big up the conspiracies that they were wronged, that every game where they lose, they've been wronged by the ref, and they remember that. I have never known a fan base to pick out just every little incident. I was on the way home last night and someone really figured out that Paul Tierney, the ref from last night, was the ref who didn't give Kane the red card against Liverpool in December, which no one was denying. Like, everyone was saying, wow, how did he get away with that? Even us were like, we have properly got away with one. That's a red all day long.
Yeah, that sounds like Illuminati confirmed to me, mate. So
oh, yeah. I think they got him, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, like... That sort of thing, I could pay less attention to it, to be honest. Like, it's just it's funny. That's all it is. It's not to be entertained.
It's
with
any, grown men.
Yeah, it's not to be. They're just grown men, just innocent grown men. but it's not really to be, you know, taken with any, you know, sensibility. I suppose you're not supposed to take it seriously. Like, I don't think Arsenal got Maybe there's some bias, but I don't think Arsenal were robbed by the referee.
Literally, the only thing that I think they're kind of right about is that players do have reputations with refs. Like, they use the cliche, "Oh, if Xhaka did that," it's kind of like, okay, if Xhaka commits a dumb foul, he will get the red for it, and I kind of agree with that. But it's not every single little thing that they're trying to do against you. It's not, that's actually something I was like, Paul Tierney doing his best to try and send Xhaka off it. Like, Xhaka... It's like, what?
Xhaka was pretty, reserved all night, right? You didn't get...
Yeah, it's like Xhaka was, calming him down. I was quite worried for Arsenal in that Xhaka's the one doing the calming here.
Yeah.
And he nearly gave away a goal, actually, 3-0 down as well. So,
yeah.
Kind of tells you all you need to know there.
Yeah, there was some interesting quotes, for sure. But, just expect it from these guys. They're so emotional all the time. They can just explode at any moment.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm kind of in a sense of double think about it, where I'm like, I'm embarrassed that the fans of our rivals think in this way, that they view football in this kind of way that they do. But at the same time, I'm also like, imagine not having a team and a set of fans that you don't hate like this. Like, imagine being like, I think my thing was Chelsea. Chelsea don't have a rivalry in the same way that Arsenal and Tottenham have each other. They hate Tottenham, but they have a real kind of obsession with Tottenham. But but Tottenham don't see it the same way. Tottenham see it as a kind of human hatred rather than a we had like divine right kind of hatred, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I guess like West Ham haters as well. Their main thing is Millwall, but they're never in the same league, so that's really different for them as well. Mm-hmm. And then just all these other clubs, like I've been covering Brentford this season, don't really have a rivalry. Like I guess it's Fulham and QPR, but it's not blood and thunder the way that it is with Tottenham and Arsenal. And I think that is why obviously we're really biased. We're all going to say, I think this is the best rivalry derby in the UK. Not the UK, sorry. I think Old Firm probably, because that's it. That's in its own like kind of tier. That's
something
over here. Yeah. That's not football.
But
that's global kind of thing.
Yeah. But I'd say like on a par with Old Firm in that like it never disappoints. We were talking about this.
In
our Slack like yesterday, and I was saying like North London derby. Like I don't see how you can't enjoy it. I know because like the whole thing is frantic for me. Like if it's always filled with ridiculousness, how can you not like this? And like how can you like big yourself up for a Liverpool United derby when Sky used to promote the shit out of that all week and it ended up with like
Red Monday 2016 0-0. I was watching it at Yates in Portsmouth. I'll never get that back.
Yeah, exactly. And it ends up with Mourinho going to Anfield and getting a point, and like that's our Monday night football. Like, amazing. What a fixture.
That's all we've got time for this week.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. I don't think any match, I'd say. Maybe like Liverpool and United's rivalry is more intense. It may, obviously not anymore, because one team is so clear ahead of the other.
They have like the kind of history behind it. Like that's a different kind of thing. It's the pressure of playing for those clubs. But in terms of just... Because it does feel like the whoever comes in through the doors at Tottenham and Arsenal, they do seem to be informed quite early on, this is the team that you hate. You cannot associate yourselves with them. Don't do it. You can't do that. Whereas I don't see the kind of same thing with like, I think my example I remember is Hugo Lloris and Olivier Giroud, I think, are really good friends. Mm-hmm. When Giroud was at Arsenal, they never kind of pitched together. They never said anything about each other, nothing. Then when Giroud goes to Chelsea, I think there's a little bit more then, but it's because the kind of rivalry is kind of broken then. Whereas you kind of see with like Man City, Man United, for example, like their kind of Portuguese contingent are really close. They're really kind of... Yeah, and I'm trying not to be proper old football man here.
Roy Keane's rolling in his grave.
You know what I mean? Like, I think it doesn't matter. Like, the players do seem
for goodness sake.
Like, yeah. To whip out a cliche, it does seem that the players on both sides, I'm not saying it's just Tottenham, but Arsenal as well, because they, you know, this is it. They get it. They understand it. There's an import. It's engraved in these clubs to hate the other. And that's different. I think that's why it's with Arsenal, with Rangers and Celtic. Because part of your identity is hating the other side and wanting them to do as worse as possible. Whereas I don't think that's the case with the other rivalries.
Yeah, I'd agree for sure. Like you said, the Chelsea one is just like, we don't like you people. It's a bit different in that sort of way.
It's just like, please go away.
Yeah, in that kind of way, I'd say there's like almost more respect for Arsenal, because at least it's just like a local turf thing.
Yeah, it's definitely. Right, yeah,
just two parties thinking the other.
Yeah, I'm not wishing Arsenal's got a business or anything like that. relegated. Now you're talking my language. I'm not saying
no, they still need to be there. Obviously, we just can't have them finishing above us.
It's just the thing, if you need to have the lightning rod for your ill feelings as well.
Yeah, and I've got a healthy way to do it. Yeah,
and I think this is the healthiest way you can do it.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've got Arsenal pals who you'll talk to the game with, and they'll be very.
I live in a massive Arsenal circle. As in,
oh, you do.
I have a group. I'm in a group chat where it's 12 Arsenal fans, one Chelsea fan, and then me. And the amount, like, honestly, I'm ashamed to say the amount of times like I've kind of been roped into watching games at Arsenal pubs, like, you know. Well, the famous Arsenal pub, the 12 Pins in Finsbury Park. I've been there too many times. Too many times. The chat is named after the 12 Pins. I'm just living in this circle all the time. And whenever Derby Week comes up, I'm just like, I cannot afford us to lose this game. Yeah. And there's just so much. And like just reading through like the chat, like all the kind of fume. Like I know there's one guy said that he left at half time because he was like, it's just the most pointless match ever. What's the point? I'm going home. So, you know, point? On days like this, it's perfect. So I guess the thing is, we just got to hope that we can do our bit towards down the stretch and hope that Thursday night wasn't just, not for nothing, because I think this is still an important thing, but that it achieves to our big goal, which is to get into the top four, which requires us to beat Burnley on Sunday. Or get a draw and hope for a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we just need to better Arsenal's results, really, yeah. Don't we?
Yeah.
So, you know, we could get two draws and they could lose one and draw one and that'd be okay. Yeah. Hopefully it's not like that, because that will be hell. That might be the worst ending to a season for my heart rate.
Yeah.
That I could probably imagine. But yes, Burnley, really sort of touched on how scared of Vout I am. I don't know if you feel the same, but he might just bundle one in off his arse in like the fifth minute.
A little bit. There's times where he does look imposing, but the last few times I've seen him, he's looked really kind of useless. So I'm hoping that's the version of him that turns up on Sunday.
Yeah,
and you mentioned the Brighton and Brentford games. Like, Burnley aren't on the level of Brighton and Brentford. Burnley don't have that kind of... I know they won a good run recently, but they got beaten by Villa where they looked quite vulnerable. I don't think they're as organised. I don't think they carry as much threat. And ultimately, this is a game where quality should tell. If you're like, I'd have to check, but I think apart from when they did Liverpool and Anfield last year, I think their record away at big six clubs is like staggeringly shocking. Like, they get battered quite a bit. It's just really a Turf Moor where they make that advantage count. So this should be a good game for it.
We smashed them last season, right? Was that one of the dream games with like Bale and Son Kane all playing and doing really well? Smash them at home anyway, right?
Could you remind me what happened in it?
I think we won.
I think you might be right. I think it's in that class. No, you're right. I did go. Yeah, I went to that game. We did. That's them. Yeah, I think Bale scored. Yeah,
I think Bale scored. It might have been four, but yeah, it was just
it was one of those like spring games where like we were playing like them and West Brom and Palace and Sheffield United, and we were just like smashing them. Like, where it's like one of the games where we were just doing our thing, and that was enough. So
yeah, we were just
hopefully it's just as simple as that this weekend. But yeah,
we'll see. I mean, Burnley, their manager's just won. You know their manager, of course, Mike Jackson. He's just won manager.
The Mike Jackson.
And, you know,
Tall Frank robbed.
Yeah. keep pushing the narrative, man. You know,
it's right. He's up for manager of the season. I don't see Mike Jackson up for that. I see Mike Jackson getting relegated. No, seriously.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, who have they been? They've been Wolves, who are sort of on holiday, Southampton and Watford, and then they just lost to Villa. So
I guess the thing for them is they still will win those games where they haven't been winning before. So
yeah,
that's important for them. But it doesn't feel like if they'd gone on a massive kind of run. They've only that before they won those games, they'd only won about three this season, and one of which was against us.
Yeah, that's fine. Can I ask who you'd rather see go down out of Burnley and Leeds? Because I'm quite firm in my belief in one.
I think in an ideal world, it's somehow Everton, but at the same time, we get top four. But we're probably going to need them to do something.
Yeah.
I think Burnley are a good Premier League supervillain. I guess it also requires someone that they replace Dyche with someone who is also like Dyche, and they don't go for some kind of progressive route. So, because if they go with someone who's actually kind of like young and up and coming, it's like, okay, get these guys out of here. We've got enough of those. Got enough of those teams. Don't need Burnley.
I just can't see Burnley playing it out from the back, mate. I just don't think it's ever going to happen.
You never know, mate. You don't know what these teams are like. Could you imagine Brighton under Potter when Hudson was there?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Josh Brown becomes the new Pedri.
I feel like it's Leeds. I think it's Leeds
as well.
Yeah. I'd rather them stay up and not have Everton go down. But if you had to choose, then picking Leeds.
Yeah, I think Leeds is funny.
Dirty Leeds.
Because their grand fairy tale is over if they go down. They have to start it all over again.
For nothing.
Yeah.
Jesse Marsh came in. Pointing at the fans.
And the eagle on his crest, I'm sure.
Good tactics. We've got two red cards in two games in 30th minute. Hold on.
Well done.
That was the thing, actually. Get them down. They didn't do us any favours against Arsenal or Chelsea. Great.
Yeah. No longer Leeds fans, unfortunately. because they didn't help us.
Yeah. Out. Okay.
Luke.
All right. Anything else you want to chat about, mate? I feel like we did, this is a big old one we've got today.
It has, yeah.
Our Zoom call didn't even run out. I thought we had the cheap Zoom.
I know. I don't really know what's gone on here. I think it's still recording. It is still recording.
We've
oh, God. Whoops.
No, you say that, but I was at halftime last night, and I thought the draft of my ratings had saved, and it didn't, so I had to do them all again and start the second half. That's why I partially missed the Son goal, because I was busy writing, and then there were people in front of me standing up as well. So
that's horrendous, yeah. Mate.
But, yeah, I think we've...
At least it was a quiet second half, though.
Yeah, actually, made good job, yeah.
Yeah, nothing else to report.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's everything, mate. I think we've rattled through a fair amount. Some good choice content.
Yeah, I hope that everyone's enjoyed this episode. I know that I did. I know that you did, Jude.
It's been a tough effort, but we've got through it.
It's been great. I don't know if we're going to be able to do one before... the end of the season, actually.
You can do one, mate.
I've
got so much. I've just got so much jazz in me at the moment after that result yesterday. Yeah, because we're off to Barcelona, aren't we? So
Barcelona.
Unless you want to do one on the Friday when we get back.
we might not be. Maybe.
Yeah.
Of course, Ben, Hunter, and Dan get the gang back together. They can do one.
Yeah, hopefully they can do one, mate.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll make them do one. Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please subscribe, and if you haven't left a rating review, please do. It really helps us a lot. And if we don't see you next week, we'll see you at the end of the season, where hopefully we've secured a return to the Champions League. Bye now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.